Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with TwinsTrivia.com and with another fun interview with a player from the Twins' wonderful past. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with former Twins pitcher Mike Smithson. Mike, all 6'8" of him, pitched for Minnesota from 1984 through 1987. And in 1984 and 1985, Mike led the American League in games started, and he pitched over 250 innings each of those years. So let's talk with Mike. Mike, you were born and raised in Centerville, Tennessee, I believe. Can you tell us a little about the sports that you enjoyed and played growing up?
Well, Centerville was a small, little rural farming town, sort of right in the middle of the state of Tennessee, and went to a small high school and basically tried to play football and basketball. When I was growing up, high school team, we didn't have a team until my junior year in high school, so I played 1 year of baseball in high school, but did not play my senior year, concentrating on basketball, which I got a basketball scholarship to the University of Tennessee, so baseball was more of a summer thing for me.
Okay. And like you said, you received a basketball scholarship to the University of Tennessee. But you also played baseball there. What sports did you play, both of the sports for all the years, or how did that go?
Well, one of the basketball players was on the baseball team, and before the season was over, he wanted to throw a little bit, so he asked me if I'd go down into the bubble, the indoor workout facility, and throw with him. And one day the baseball coach walked in and saw me throwing with him and asked if I'd ever played before, and I told him I had played some in the summer, and he said, well, if you wouldn't mind coming back tomorrow, I'd like to bring a catcher back in and watch you throw. And so I came back the next day and threw for him, and he went right to the basketball coach and asked the coach if it'd be all right if I played baseball too, and Coach Mears said yes, so he put me on the freshman team that year, and just sort of blossomed from there, and got drafted by the Red Sox in 1976.
Well, you must. What was your baseball team like at Tennessee?
Well, at that time, we were the best team that in the history of the school. At that time, we had a lot of really good players. Condor Holloway was our shortstop. Rick Honeycutt was one of our pitchers, first baseman. The team was basically made up of football and basketball players. There weren't but about three or four scholarship baseball players, so it was sort of odd in that aspect. But like I said, when you got a shortstop like Condridge and you had another pitcher like Rick, we set a school record for wins at that time with 32.
Well, you must have been a pretty good player yourself, Mike, because as far as from what I understand, you made the All Tennessee All Century Baseball Team.
Yeah, that was a great honor. That had a lot to do with, I think, stats that while I was there, and people got to vote on the computer. But one of the greatest honors I've ever received was to be named to that team. You know, to be recognized in the top 25 over the last 100 years of Tennessee baseball, that was a pretty big honor for me.
I would say. The Red Sox selected you in the fifth round of the 1976 free agent draft. Tell us what you remember about that draft and your subsequent signing with the Red Sox.
Well, it's sort of unusual. I really never anticipated getting drafted. Nobody ever talked to me during the year. The whole talk was about Honeycutt, about that everybody thought that he would be a first-round pick. So my brother called me. I was in a dorm room. My brother called me and said, hey, you know, you got drafted. And I said, what? I said, I didn't know they had a military draft. And they said, no, you got drafted by the Red Sox in the fifth round. So I was more surprised than anything, but happy that it happened, of course.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Did you get a decent signing bonus?
Got $12,000 and spent half of it on a brand-new 76 Monte Carlo. And got married that year, and we used the other half, me and my wife, to go to New Orleans for our honeymoon. We went to Mardi Gras, so that spent it well.
Well, you did. After you signed in 76, you worked your way up through the Red Sox minor league system, but in April of 1982, the Red Sox traded you to the Texas Rangers. What was it like to be traded for the first time?
Well, it was a blessing for me. I was getting ready to go back to Pawtucket for my fourth year. I sort of switched every year. I couldn't really decide if I was going to be a starter, reliever. You know, I had one of those arms that could really do both, and so it seemed like every year I was getting either being a reliever or a starter. And when they sent me down that last year, I went in and said, you know, I really don't want to go back for my fourth year. And the farm director taught me into going back. They were going to make me a starter again. And by the time I'd driven from Winter Haven to Pawtucket, I'd got traded to Texas. And like I said, you know, that was really a blessing. Really helped both guys. I got traded for John Henry Johnson, and he mm-hmm. got to the big leagues with the Red Sox, and I got to the big leagues with the Rangers. So, that, you know, really that's the way a trade's supposed to work.
Yeah, help both teams.
Right.
Going back to 1981 for just a moment, Mike, I believe you pitched in what's called the longest game in Major League history between your Pawtucket team and the Rochester Red Wings, who are now a Twins AAA team.
Yeah, in the Baseball Hall of Fame because of that. It was just a weird night, something I'm very proud of. I mean, that's going to be a record that will never be broken. I've been numerous books written about it. Just had a reunion about 4 or 5 years ago, the 30th reunion. And that team I played on right there, the 76 draft by the Red Sox, there were 11 guys that made it to the major leagues out of that draft.
That's amazing.
From that one team. And I know, of course, Rochester had Cal Ripken and Mike Bonner. But the game was a game that Pawtucket was a small field, but it was sort of mist and rain that night, and the wind was blowing in. And it was just a miracle that anybody had scored. You know, the thing that you look back in the box score, 32 innings, 33 innings we played, we only made two errors. And like I said, I had a very, very good ball club to play behind, too. You know, when you talk about... We had Wade Boggs, we had Marty Barrett, Dave Cozza drove in the winning run. The pitching staff was myself and Bruce Hurst and Manny Sarmiento and Louis, losing names right now, but yeah. Like I said, there were about 10 guys that made it to the major leagues off that team.
That's pretty amazing. You know, I've read some accounts of the game, and they were talking about how it was kind of cold as the game progressed, and there were some fires being started in the bullpens and things.
Like I said, in Pawtucket, you know, when those northeasters blow through, it was it was the night before Easter Sunday. The game got started late. There was a wreck out in the parking lot that knocked the light pole down, so the game got started late. And from my understanding of the whole deal, in the rule book that year, they left out the curfew rule, and the umpire would not call the game. And so we played 32 innings. It was like 5 o'clock in the morning on Easter Sunday when we all went home.
Holy cow. Quite the game.
Yeah.
You started the 82 season in AAA for the Rangers, but by August they called you up, and you made your Major League debut on August the 27th of 1982 in Baltimore's Memorial Stadium. And you pitched a complete game, but you lost 3-1 to Jim Palmer and the Orioles.
Right. Wow. Yeah, that's one of my biggest memories. Sitting there watching the College World Series, and that's where I got called up from, was Rosenblatt Stadium. I needed 4 strikeouts to take over the American Association strikeout lead, and struck out like four of the first 5 guys. And after I got the 4th one, the manager, Rich Domi, started coming out to the mound, and I'm sort of wondering, you know, what are you doing? And he comes out, and he puts his hand out, and of course that means, you know, you're done. So
yep.
I walk back in the dugout, sit down, and he comes over and sits down beside me. He goes, I know you're probably pretty mad, but he goes, you're going to be pitching in Baltimore in 2 days. So I don't know if you ever saw the movie Big Leagues, and you know, when they called Willie Mays Hayes,
that
he was going to go to the big leagues. Well, I went into the locker room and sort of did my little Willie Mays Hayes. But, yeah, the game against Baltimore, my first 2 pitches in my big league career were double-doubles, so I was down 1-0 and threw 2 pitches. And then when you look up, there's Eddie Murray in the box. So he was my first big league strikeout. And sort of settled down, got over the nerves, and pitched fairly well. And like you said, you know, losing to Jim Palmer in a complete game is not all that bad.
Not too shabby at all, that's for sure. In 1983, you were with the Rangers all season, and you started 33 games for them. And then kind of out of the clear blue in December of that year, you and John Butcher were traded to Minnesota for Gary Ward, the minor leaguer. What did you think of that trade?
I was sort of shocked because I'd just gotten back from Texas. I was their rookie of the year and went down for a banquet to receive the award. And uh, I saw Rader, Doug Rader, our manager, and I said, you know, there's some rumors going around that I'm going to get traded. And he said, oh, no, no. He said, we're not going to trade you. You know, you're young pitcher, cornerstone of our rotation. And by the time I'd gotten back home to Nashville, I'd been traded to the Twins. But it all worked out great.
It did. In 84 and 85, as a Twin, you won 15 games each season. You led the American League in starts with 36 and 37 starts, respectively, and you threw over 250 innings each year. The following season, in 86, you started 33 more games, but your innings dropped to 198. Did the innings of the previous couple seasons take its toll?
I think it did. And I think also, I'm not real sure, but I believe in that 86 season, like six or seven of my first 10 starts were complete games. And I don't think, I just never really recovered from all that work. And not that I had a big injury, but my arm just never, you know, I always prided myself on having a rubber arm. And it just never did bounce back from previous starts like it had in the past, and had some elbow tendonitis. And just, you know, that's baseball. If you're a pitcher, you're going to get hurt. You just have to pitch through that stuff.
That's a lot of innings, though. In 1987, the Twins World Championship season, you started the season as a starter, but you struggled, and by the end of July, you were out of the starting rotation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was tough. You work really hard, and you're part of the, you see those young guys come up, you know, when they brought all them guys up from Double A.
Yeah.
And the hardest part was just not being able to be in there and help them out like, you know, I thought I could, but hey, it's a business, it's professional baseball, and things like that happen. So one thing that I learned early in my career, there's only one person that believes in you, and that's yourself. So just had to keep on plugging and do what it took to get back to the big leagues.
You weren't on the playoff roster in 87. How did all that come about?
Really don't know. You know, they sent me down to Portland and pitched well, and they brought me back up in September.
Mm-hmm.
I started some big games for them there down the stretch run, and don't know what the thinking was. So I can't give you really, you know, answer on that. But just, I was just glad that the Twins went to the playoffs and won the World Series that year. It's one of the highlights of my life.
Did you end up receiving a World Series ring?
Yeah, sure did. Okay. Yeah, the guys voted me a ring and a share. So
that's great.
Yeah, I'll never forget them for that.
Yeah, that had going to the World Series and winning that. Boy, that's really something.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember getting my ring, and I was with the Red Sox the next year, and the ring came UPS into the Red Sox locker room. So that was a lot of fun showing those guys that, hey, you know, country boy over here's got a World Series ring, and y'all hadn't won one since 1912.
That's right. That's right. In December of 87, the Twins released you and you signed a free agent contract with the Red Sox, where you had started, and you ended up pitching there for the next two seasons, splitting time between starting and relieving. And it was in 1988 that you finally got a taste of the playoffs, but the Red Sox were swept by the Oakland A's.
Right.
What was it like to pitch in the playoffs?
It was just like I expected, excitement. The games are high pressure, sellout crowds, high pressure. It's just everything that you dreamed it would be, you know, when you're growing up playing
sure.
in the backyard. So just glad to get in. Joe Morgan happened to be my manager in AAA, and had Morgan's miracle there right in the middle of the season where we won like 22 games in a row, and I was a big part of that. So I think he had confidence in me and used me in all sorts of different situations, which I liked.
Okay. Well, that's, at least you got a chance to pitch in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so that was kind of nice.
Well, I mean, you know, not being on the Twins, of course, big disappointment. But, hey,
sure.
I did TV. I was there. They took me on the road. They took me on the road with them. I was doing color for one of the local TV stations. I can't remember which one now. But I was treated like I was a part of the team. So even though I wasn't in uniform, I was still there.
Yeah. And I can certainly remember watching those games. We got a chance to go to a couple of them, so that was pretty nice.
Right.
You signed a free agent contract with the Angels in December of 89, but you never pitched for the Angels or anyone else for that matter, and you retired from baseball at the age of 35.
Right.
Tell us what that was all about. What was it like for you?
Well, at the time I didn't know it, but I needed to have a hip replacement. I thought I had a severely pulled hamstring or a poor growing muscle. I was having real trouble with my left hip, so I went to spring training with the Angels. Well, what had happened, the Red Sox sort of pulled a Carlton fist with me. They didn't send me my contract until December 22nd, which would have meant I would have been in the minor leagues for the first month. So called my agent, voiced my displeasure with him, and he said, give me a couple days. They called back a couple days, and the Angels signed me to a one-year guaranteed contract. So went to spring training with them and pitched one or two innings maybe and got released the last day of spring training.
Oh, wow.
So the flight home to Nashville was sort of a soul-searching time, and, I had about 8 or 9 hours to think about what I wanted to do. With my hip being the way it was and having the guaranteed contract, which was a blessing in disguise too, so it gave me sort of a year to figure out what I wanted to do. I knew that I didn't want to go back to the minor leagues. I couldn't have took the pain, because it was pretty painful. And since I had it replaced and got a hip replacement, but I knew my career was probably over. I could have probably played another year or two in the minor leagues, but mm-hmm. That's not what I wanted to do.
You're a big man, Mike. You're 6'8", but you were not known as a hard thrower. But you weren't afraid to pitch inside. What pitches did you throw, and how did you? What was your pitching philosophy?
Well, in college, I was really raw. My line score for me in college was give up 2 or 3 hits, strike out 10 or 11, and hit about 5. So I was never afraid to throw inside, but. My rookie year at Texas, Jim Sundberg was our catcher, and he put down a fastball inside, and I shook him off, and he put down a fastball inside, and I shook him off, and he walked out to the mound, and he goes, hey, Rook, how many years have you been in the big leagues? And I said, well, none. And he goes, you throw where I want you to throw it. So he taught me how to pitch inside and not be afraid to hit guys. Not on purpose, but there's sometimes you just got to hit somebody.
Well, Bert Blylevin, always said good things about Sundberg as a catcher.
Right. He taught me how to pitch.
Yeah. What pitches did you throw?
I was basically a fastball slider pitcher. Struggled with an off-speed pitch, but I could have really mastered that to go with my other two. I think I had above-average sinker and probably average or above-average slider, but... Throwing inside, keeping the right-handers, in out there sort of three-quarters, so that sort of kept the right-handers loose a little bit, and that's basically what I went with.
And it sounded like it worked for you. In your 4 years in Minnesota, you ended up playing for 3 different managers, I think, Billy Gardner and Ray Miller and Tom Kelly. Who did you enjoy playing for the most, and why?
A tough question to answer. All 3 guys had their own different way of doing things. Billy just sat back and let us do our job and pitch. And Ray was a pitching coach and taught me a lot of things about pitching and how to be a starting pitcher. And then, of course, TK was just one of those guys that he was a true professional, and I really enjoyed playing for him. So all 3 were different in their own ways, but I liked all 3 guys.
And, not a lot of people have a lot of real positive things to say about Miller as a manager. And so I was, I think I saw a story that you did maybe with Baseball Digest going back to 85 or 86, something like that. And you had good things to say about Ray. And so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, I can tell you, like I said, I had a bunch of complete games early, and that told me that he had confidence in me, that he had more confidence in me than maybe some of the guys in the bullpen, and that's why he left me in there in some situations that maybe he shouldn't have. But, hey, when you're a starter, you take the baseball, and my goal was to complete every game. I was old school. I didn't like to get taken out, and I think Ray knew that, and I really respected him for having that feeling about me.
What do you think about pitch counts?
You know, I work at the high school level now, and that's a big thing. Everybody talks about pitch counts, but, you know, I never really heard of any such thing in college when I was playing. And, you know, I was under the impression that the hitter would let you know when you were done. So I don't know. I'm still not a big believer in pitch counts. I guess I am when you're talking about young kids now. I think probably should be rules for youngsters, but you know, when you're a professional baseball, you're a professional. You've got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. What was your favorite Twins memory?
Man, there's a lot of them. One that I always go back to is Kirby Puckett. In 84, he was not with us in spring training.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Eisenreich was our center fielder. And we were playing in Fenway. Of course, Jimmy had Tourette's, and he had another one of his attacks.
Yeah.
So they told us we were getting ready to go to Anaheim and start a series with the Angels. And they told us that we're going to get a new center fielder, and his name is Kirby Puckett. Of course, nobody knew who he was. So we're sitting in the clubhouse in Anaheim, and in walks this little black guy, and everybody thought he was a clubhouse kid. He said, "No, that's your new center fielder." And I remember Don Sutton was pitching that night for the Angels, and Kirby's first at bat. He went up there, and he never took it off his shoulder. He took three strikes, and he sat down, and we were sort of looking at each other, you know, well. And then I think he went 4-for-4. I think he went 4-for-5 his first game, and he just, and let me say this about Kirby, one of the best teammates I ever played with or played against or whatever, and that whole Twins team, I think that was a secret. One of the big secrets of why they won is everybody on that team truly, truly did like each other. You know, mm-hmm. Boston was a little different. You know, I'd heard 24 players, 24 Cavs. And it wasn't like that at all, but it was more, in Minnesota, it had more of a college feel to it.
Okay.
So, and I really do believe that's why they won.
Could well be. What did Mike? What did you do once you left professional baseball?
Well, when I first got out, I was living in Nashville, and I was working at a junior college helping a friend of mine with baseball, and I was doing color commentary with the Nashville Sounds. Larry Schmidt along the baseball team there, and it sort of joked that I was the only Tennessee guy he had ever hired. So, but I did some radio there, and my father got sick, and me and my wife decided we needed to move back to where I was born and raised and help my father out. He had a farm and some cattle, and so we did that, and one of the best moves I've ever made, moving back home.
Okay. What does Mike Smithson do today?
Well, I'm the athletic director at Hickman County High School, assistant boys basketball coach, head cross country coach, field maintenance, you name it, I do it. I've got a job that everybody would love to have. I love going to work every day, and a lot of days, if you want to find me, just come out to one of the fields, and I'll be riding a mower working on the fields.
It's fun to be outside.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But you, I understand that the high school baseball field is named after you, Mike.
Yeah, another great honor. Like I said, when I first went back, I coached baseball a little bit, and had two 20-win seasons in a row, which was sort of unheard of for our school, and coached a couple of all-state players. And of course, being there was one other guy from our county that made it to major leagues, but that was back in the early 1900s. So, you know, I guess I'm sort of a celebrity here. I don't look at myself as that, but I guess people do look at me that way here. And you know, I just feel like it gives me credibility when I talk with the kids, and they know that I've been there and done that. But you'd be surprised how many kids in our school don't even know that I play baseball. But you know, I like it that way. I really do.
So what do you enjoy doing in your spare time?
Well, I love to play golf, and I just really like to be around our coaches. It's a lot of fun hiring coaches and working with personalities, and we put on a big Christmas tournament. I'm at school all the time, so my hobby is being at school.
It's interesting being around the young kids and helping them. That's really nice.
Well, I love it. Like I said, I've got the job that I think that I've always wanted, and you know, not having it to be your breadwinner, if you know what I mean. Me and my wife, we weren't extravagant by any means, and I didn't make a lot of money by any means, but I was smart with it, and this job is more not a
Sure.
It's something I don't have to worry about. You know, I get to go to work and do what I need to do and not have to worry about what kind of money I'm making.
Good for you, and that's really nice. So what kind of a city or community is Centerville?
Well, it's a basic city of the U.S. right now. We've lost most of our industry. We used to have when I was growing up, we had a large Levi Strauss plant with a Genesco shoe factory. We had two or three major industries in our county, but they've all gone away. And I'd have to say, if you don't work for our school system, you probably drive out of the county to work, unless you're on your own business. And there's a lot of farming. We have about, our county's the fourth largest county in the state, and we have about 13,000 people. The city itself is about 500. The high school's got 625, and we have two high schools in our county, and each have about 625. So,
okay.
Small school, small county, really a good place to live.
Well, that's great. Sounds like it. I grew up in a small town. Our high school class was about 30 kids. Pretty much the same 30
right.
that we started first grade with.
Right.
Know?
I think our graduating class this year was 150. So graduation was over quick.
Yep. Well, Mike, I thank you very much for spending the time with us today.
My pleasure, and always glad to hear from people from Minnesota. I got to tell you, my wife and I, we really loved Minnesota. The fans were great to me, and I can't wait to get back to see the new ballpark. Since you know, haven't been there to see it yet, seen it on TV, but we loved our 5 years in Minnesota. And when people ask me what teams I played for, I always tell them Twins first. So. I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you very much.